Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan and Weiss back with you again. I'm back after a little bit of a hiatus. Tell you why in a second. Before we get into everything, we got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, you can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. All right, I'm back. 2 weeks ago, you had Will and Weiss. Last week, you had Weiss solo. This week, I'm back, and I'm back with a little extra hardware. I'm a married man, got married 2 weeks ago, was on a mini moon of sorts last week.
There you go.
And now I'm back. I'm back. So, came back from my mini moon on Saturday. It's a lovely day, beautiful weather all week.
It was, yeah.
We went to the North Fork of Long Island, did a lot of wine drinking, then went to Sag Harbor in the Hamptons for a couple days. Beautiful week weather-wise. I'm with my wife. I'm with my dog. The only negative part about the entire week is that I got violently ill with food poisoning on Wednesday of the trip. I saw God on the floor of the bathroom, just like had a total exorcism. Anyway, you guys don't want to hear about that. Come home Saturday. It's lovely, unpacking and everything. And then Sunday, I sit down on the couch. Weiss, you and I are chatting, trying to figure out what our schedule is going to be for the podcast. All right, we're going to record tomorrow night. And my wife looks over at the TV, sees exactly what's going on. I mention the podcast. She goes, oh, which podcast? Islanders or Giants? I go, Giants. She goes, well, they suck.
Yeah.
What could you possibly have to say about the Giants sucking? If only she'd listened to my recordings and our recordings for the last 3 seasons, she would know that we can talk for hours about how bad the Giants suck. Anyway.
The Giants suck.
It's good to see your face.
Oh, yeah.
The Giants suck. It's good to see your face.
Yeah, though. It's good to see you. You look very... You look like you've grown up, and in a good way.
I feel different. I feel, you know, a lot of people, right, like you wake up after like a big birthday, people go, oh, how do you feel? And you're like, I feel exactly the same. I do feel different. I will admit, I do feel different now that I'm married a little bit. I feel like there are very few life events you can say that about yourself, but I do feel it.
Yes. Marriage, I remember when I got married, first couple of weeks, people looking at you differently. A lot of people always say like, oh, I remember when you were so young. Now you're married. It's like, yeah, that's kind of how life works.
Yeah, I got a lot of that last 2 weeks.
So, yeah, I've been there. I know how you feel.
Yeah.
But
all right, so the Giants. The New York football Giants.
I'll let you go first. So, you haven't been here for 2 weeks.
For 2 weeks. Yeah. And I've missed a lot in those 2 weeks. I missed a win. I missed a bad loss. And here we are after another bad loss. I am really speechless, and I feel like throughout the course of the day, today especially, because we spoke about this pre-show, right? Like, fresh off my wedding and my mini moon, like I'm back at work after 2 weeks. Like, I feel like I got a lot of shit on my plate, a lot of responsibilities, and I have just been teetering is not the right word because the swings are violent, just violent swings between raging mad and total apathy. And the total apathy hit me on Sunday where, so if you know, I mean, you listen to the podcast, you know me an iota about me. I'm a degenerate gambler. So Saturdays, college football, Sundays, NFL football. And right before I left for my mini moon, my now wife is watching me sweat out Packers -2.5 on the road against the Bengals with Mason Crosby missing 3 field goals in a row. She goes, okay, you know what? Like, it was fun. But, like, you know, we've been sort of doing our own thing for a while because, like, we don't want to get sick for the wedding. Like, you should go out. Like, go out and watch some of the games next week when we get back with your friends. I go, okay, that's a great idea. The way that things unfolded Sunday morning, you know, I got back just in time for Giants kickoff. So I couldn't go to watch, you know, the Giants game and some red zone with my friends elsewhere because I didn't want to miss the Giants game. So right. The first half of the Giants game ends, and for the first time in, I think, ever, like, at least since high school, I purposefully did not watch the second half of the Rams game. I got up, and I said, you know what? It's a beautiful fall day. My friends are waiting for me in Manhattan. I'm going to go watch the rest of the games with them.
So can I clarify something with you real quick?
Go ahead.
The Packers and the Bengals, you mean the Packers and the Bears?
No. I'm talking about the week before. So the week before, I'm watching with my now wife. She's watching me go fucking apeshit at all these missed field goals.
She told you to go out with your friends.
She said, next week when we get back, you go out with your friends.
I got you, yeah.
So, yeah. So, although I did have the Packers against the Bears. Okay. I own you. I still fucking own you. I always own you. That was awesome.
I felt that win.
I fucking love Aaron Rodgers. He is my GOAT. We've spoken about this. So anyway, yeah, the Giants are down miserably at half, and I'm like, you know what? Like, if it's going to take me 45 minutes to get into the city, I can wait until the end of the Giants game and not really get there until, like, close to 5, in which case maybe I stay for 2 hours, 2.5 hours before I have to schlep all the way back to Jersey. I'm just going to leave now. What's the point? This game is over.
Right.
Like if the players on the field are actively quitting on the team – why am I going to bother sitting there on my couch when I can be out enjoying the day with my friends? Friends that I'm in a fantasy football league with, friends that were at my wedding, that I've known my – like, why am I going to just sit there on my couch and let them ruin the rest of my fucking day?
Right.
They don't care. Why should I?
Right.
And that attitude was reflected in the stadium this past weekend with streams of fans.
Oh, yeah.
Just walking out of the stadium. Literally, I think the only thing that people stayed for was the 2011 celebration at halftime. And after that, what was the score? 28-3? Go ahead.
By
beat
the way,
traffic.
I don't blame you. These ceremonies are just so cheesy. But go ahead. Keep going.
I mean, they're very cheesy. And while we're on, this is not even cheesy celebration, but, and speaking of cheesy ceremonies. Not that this was cheesy, because like he's a dude that should be honored, but like, fuck the Washington football team for just randomly planning a 17-year number retirement ceremony for Sean Taylor amidst everyone else getting clipped and caught up in these emails, with the exception of Dan Snyder. But I digress. Yes, these halftime ceremonies are cheesy. It is no fucking surprise that John Mara and Steve Tisch did not show their faces, and really, like, we spoke about this a few weeks ago. I feel like he has to show his face during the Michael Strahan game, but it's we're getting to a point where if Matt Rhule comes in here and just cock slaps John Mara, and then the week I don't even know the exact order of the schedule. The week after that, are they Chiefs?
I think it's at the Chiefs on Monday night. Yes,
on Monday Night Football, that's going to be a fucking disaster, and the Chiefs don't even look like as amazing as they possibly could. I don't know. And at halftime, my dad and I were going to go to the Panthers game halftime. He texts me. He goes, so should I sell the tickets? I go, yeah, yes. Go ahead. Yeah. Sell the tickets. I do not care.
I encourage everyone to sell their tickets. If anyone asks me, like, on Twitter or the email, like, I get emails sometimes from fans. I think I got, like, one email from a fan this morning, like, tell me why I should go to the game. And I don't really respond to emails like that, but I literally responded, you shouldn't. Like,
you shouldn't. But you know what? Here's the thing. It's not going to hurt the Giants.
No.
But you can use that time far more productively at home or doing literally anything else. So you're right.
So
you shouldn't go. Listen, if you have the PSL and you don't want to take a loss on your tickets, whatever, dude, just go. Like no one's – I don't – if you go, I do not think less of you. If anything, I think more highly of you because you can stomach the traffic and the travel just to sit there and watch that abomination of a football team.
In that shit stadium.
Me personally, yeah, in the shit stadium, which we'll, I do want to talk about, not just from the design, but the turf.
Right.
Just awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, I think you put it in – you pretty summed it up really well. I think many Giants fans can relate to the type of feelings that you felt. I certainly can. I just think it's – I mean
– But again, you hear the – at least I hope that you can hear like the passion in which I'm preaching right
now. Absolutely.
But I'm preaching apathy. Like it makes – it's sort of like contradictory – of itself in a way.
You are pissed off that the Giants have forced you to care this less about them.
Perfectly put.
I agree with you. I think I have... I mean, it's at the point really where... I mean...
Weiss, we sat down to record this, and normally we have rundowns, and I say to you, this is just like a little insight into like our banter before the podcast. I say to Weiss, you didn't send me a rundown. I say, okay, good. Like, we don't need a rundown. And you, without missing a beat, go, yeah, we've done a million of these already.
Yeah. I mean, how many embarrassing losses have we sat down and recorded a podcast? And we're like, we got to talk about this. What is there to talk about? What needs to be said? I mean, I hate to, like, you know, make our viewers, like, I know they listen to us. They want us to talk about the loss and sort of share our feelings. But we will. But, like, big picture, like, everyone knows what needs to happen. I think it's pretty evident by that what needs to happen. So, like, what is there to really say right off the bat?
Well,
it is like I've been listening to a lot of people talk about this game, and a lot of people are like, you know, the one thing I always hear is like, well, the Giants have no business competing with the Rams. Well, why not? This was supposed to be the year that they were supposed to compete, right? Why is it out of the realm to say, hey, let's try to compete with the Rams. Let's try to see where we are on that scale. I mean, obviously, we're not high, but this notion that we should have already had this preconceived notion that we're not able to beat this team, like, why is that? And the answer is pretty clear that, like, this is comical. Like, this is, I feel like the Giants are like an SNL skit. Like, they're doing things to try to make people laugh at them, right? Like, I don't understand what this roster is, what is their strengths, what is their identity. Like, I'm sitting there trying to figure out, right? And I actually want to start with the coach, right? Because we could talk about the GM for the next 2 weeks and it still won't be enough to, you know, sum up our hatred for him. All right, yeah. Right. But, like, Joe Judge, for him to say after the game that I challenged my guys at halftime to play essentially 60 minutes or whatever the hell his cliche things are that he says now. They're, at this point, it's just like, give it a rest, dude. Like, come on. You know, we're 1-5, okay? Like, we get it. If you're challenging your players, and I texted this to you, if you're challenging your players at halftime in the middle of a season to play hard in the second half, you've already lost them. Because that means that...
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I said this weeks ago. Exactly. I said this weeks ago that looking at the schedule and who their opponents were and us knowing exactly what this team was, that this was going to be an exact replica, but probably worse, of 2017.
Yes. The resemblance when they lost the locker room is eerily similar. It's scary similar.
It's terrifying. And Dan Orlovsky was on ESPN with his panel with Rex Ryan and a couple other people calling Joe Judge Timmy Toughnuts. And you know what? Like, a lot of people are laughing, but the one thing that stood out to me was the comment, these are grown men, okay? They don't want to be spoken to. They want you to reason with them. And a lot of people laughed, and listen, this guy's off to a rough start. But when Joe Judge was making the Giants players, adult men, run laps during training camp as some sort of disciplinarian approach And Robert Saleh was asked about it. And Robert Saleh said, no, I don't believe in that. They're men. They know when they've fucked up. Like, no, like, that is so true. Like, that's just it. And you said it. If you have to challenge your team to try,
yeah.
We're not even at the bye yet. We're not even at the bye yet. We just finished week six, okay? We're not at the bye yet. And you have defensive players. The unit, by the way, which is remarkably healthy. Everyone likes to talk about injuries this, injuries right. that. We'll talk about the offense. They lost Blake Martinez. Shove your all 22 up your fucking ass. Right. I don't care. He's an average middle linebacker. This is a bottom of the league unit.
Yes.
Okay?
That's very expensive, if by the way. There's a lot of high prices.
That's very expensive. Right. If that's the unit that's quitting on you, you have a problem. Right. Okay, and I joked about it, right, where Landon Collins went on the radio and called Eli Apple a cancer. Like, we're close to that territory. We're getting really close to that territory where players just start calling each other out.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, like Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator, he called the team out during the week, too, his defensive unit. Like, when you start saying things like, we have to simplify things, we got to see what we're made of, like, those are all signs of a players that are not buying in, and I don't want to say that he's because completely lost.
And you're 100% right. Yeah. You're 100% right because what this is not like you got a rookie cornerback and you got this is a veteran laden defense.
Yes, James Bradbury,
a veteran laden defense.
Jabril Peppers, Leonard Williams,
Leonard Williams.
Yes, these are guys that have been.
Like Dexter Lawrence isn't a pup anymore. No. Like
Reggie Ragland's been in the league for a while.
Fuck.
Like these are veteran guys. The real only rookie or young guy I would say is, you know, probably Xavier McKinney Aziz Ojulari and I'll throw in Tate Crowder there. He's still in the second year, but like outside of that, I mean, your major guys on defense, they're all veterans. I mean, Logan Ryan is a captain.
Ryan.
Yeah, it's becoming like very clear that it just seems like they are. He's losing the locker room, and I'm not saying that he's lost it completely yet, but just the stuff he's saying and openly, and then what we heard from Patrick Graham during the week about, you know, seeing what we're going to be made of, and I mean, it's clear that what you are trying to teach or coach these players, it's not working because the result on the field. I mean, look. He said, and he, being Joe Judd, said that I challenged the players at halftime. Ethan, they still got outscored in the second half. I mean...
Yeah, with the Rams taking their foot off the gas.
Let me tell you something. I want everyone to go back and watch the second half. The Rams, they came out in the second half. They didn't have their foot on the gas in the second half at all. Yeah, Matthew Stafford played, but a lot of it was it was almost like they were treating it as a preseason game. Where they were not showing things. They were not going for it. It was just a lot of vanilla stuff. And they were running right down the Giants' throat. There were screen plays that were going, you know, 10, 15 yards. And to me, that's all a sign of a team that is either in the process of quitting or not buying in or simply just not, you know, reacting to a coach the way they should be. And it's not all on you know, Joe Judge. I think the players need to be held accountable. But listen, 1, 2, 3, okay. But when you got 6, 7, 8 starters that are I hate to say it, but revolting against you, I mean, that's, or in the process of revolting against you, I mean, that's, to me, that's, this is a sign of like, I mean, we've seen this movie in the past. So like, we're
literally four years
so
ago.
Like, we know what it looks like, you know, like we've seen it, we've experienced it. And it's crazy because I talked about this last week. I said that in 2017, when the Giants played the Rams in MetLife Stadium, the defense gave up, especially in that second quarter, where they gave up 21 points in the second quarter. They gave up 41 points between the second and third quarter in that 2017 game. The Rams could have easily mirrored that. They had 28 in the second quarter. If they wanted to in the second half, they could have easily scored another 21 points. I mean, it was like that. And because the Giants were injured on offense, they were not able to sustain drives. They just kept giving the ball back to the Rams. The Rams could have scored more points. They just took their foot off the gas. And good thing they did, because I genuinely feel like it could have been a 50 burger, and it actually could have been a 50 burger last week against the Cowboys too, but the Cowboys just had a lot of mental mistakes.
Agreed, 100%. And a lot of it, like we talk a lot about complimentary football, and we talk about complimentary football a lot of the times. People talk about it in terms of like offense only or defense only, where you're on the offense, talking about complimentary football is, you know, using the run to set up the pass, using the pass to set up the run, so on and so forth. It doesn't get spoken about enough, especially in terms of the Giants, as it pertains to the offense and the defense working together. Because, listen, you cannot excuse the total lack of effort and the total failure of Patrick Graham and his defense this year, but like a lot can be said for a defensive group getting incredibly frustrated that they are constantly responsible for having to keep like a team in games, where if the offense isn't producing and the team's only chance at winning is, and I'm talking primarily about last year, but like that was basically the goal coming into this year. Like, we knew this offense wasn't going to be anything special with Jason Garrett calling the plays, but like at least help him out a little bit. Like, if the offense was capable of putting up like 35 points more than once a season, it would make life easier on the defense.
Yeah, I think also another thing is specifically on the defense side of the ball is because you're not able to generate a pass rush, it becomes impossible for the corners to play. I don't care how good your 100%. Corners are. It doesn't matter how good your corners are.
There were people in the offseason talking about Oshane Zimenez taking the next step.
Yeah. Again, it's...
Shut up.
It's
God.
They're not getting anything from there. Like, zero.
And shame on me. I'm fucking Lorenzo Carter stan. Fucking bozo.
Yeah, Lorenzo Carter. I mean,
LeBozo Carter.
I don't know.
There you go.
And that goes back to the roster construction. I mean, I don't know how you, in 4 years, the only investment, real investment in terms of pass rushers is, you know, a second-round pick, a third-round, two third-round picks. I just don't see that. They haven't really spent money on a pass rusher. And I think it shows. I mean, when you completely ignore it and you just sort of focus on the interior of the defensive line, and then you try to act like – and I sort of talked about this last week with Dexter Lawrence. He's not a pass rush, interior pass rusher. He's a two-down nose tackle who's very athletic for his size, but he's a two-down run stopper. That's what he is. And he's not going to be a good pass rusher for this team. This is his, third year. He is who he is at this point. He's a very limited player. And, you know, we go back to positional value and picking guys that are so limited in the first round and it's with the 17th pick. And I think that you have to have that discussion there, but that's a different discussion for another day. My point is that the defense, it's so reliant on some sort of pass rush. They're not getting it. And the corners just have to cover for an extended period of time. And it's impossible. It is impossible to play that way. And then you get a guy like Sean McVay coming in, who's offensive, you know, genius, and he's going to pick you apart. And he found out real quick, hey, whoever Jabril Peppers is covering, I'm going to throw him the ball. So
pretty much.
And for some reason, the Giants continue to put Jabril Peppers on Cooper Kupp. So good luck.
A few other notes on this bozo of a head coach.
Yeah.
The fact that Daniel Jones was in the game as long as he was is just an absolute disgrace.
That up. Can I say one thing about the whole we play 60 minutes? Can I say one thing about that? I always hear that. Well, we're going to always hear coaches say this. It's typically the bad coaches too. We're going to play for a full 60 minutes. You play a full 60 minutes to win a football game. But minutes 1, 2, 3, 4, 27, 28, 30, 35, 40 of a game are very important to determining what happens between minutes 50 and 60.
You're correct. And get progressively you're more meaningless.
31 to 3. Yes. You are down 31 to 3. The game is over. He's pulled his guys. Daniel Jones is playing behind a makeshift offensive line, right? All of his weapons are not there. And you're still playing there. And your answer to that is, well, we're going to play 60 minutes. Well, let's talk about the first 45 minutes. and why you're down 31-3. And then we'll talk about why Daniel Jones is still in the game. So this whole play, it's just a cliche bullshit that we're seeing from this head coach and a lot of other bad coaches around the league that we're going to play a full 60 minutes. No, you're not, because you weren't playing well for the first 45 minutes. So you're going to sit up here and tell me that I'm going to play, we play for a full 60 minutes. Congratulations. You play a full 60-minute football game. You're still shit. You're 1-5. The other guy pulled his quarterback. Oh, is the other guy wrong? Is he not playing a full 60 minutes? Or did he just beat the shit out of you for the first 45 minutes and said, you know what? This is wrong. I can't continue to stomp my foot in his ass. Let me take my guys out.
Yeah, when a really good team plays a good 45 minutes, they don't need to play a full 60 minutes.
Exactly.
The Giants are the opposite of that. So you don't play a full 45 minutes, there's really no need to play the last 15. I promise you. That's like 31-3.
It's a terrible reason. It's a terrible reason answer for him to say, we're going to play a full 60 minutes. Well, did the Rams not play a full 60 minutes?
Absurd.
Like,
absurd.
Like, what, did you want them to keep Matthew Stafford in the game and continue to exploit your secondary with Cooper
with Cup? With Matt Parrott and Nate Solder and no Andrew Thomas and no Kadarius Toney, it's irresponsible. It's straight up irresponsible. Yeah. And part of your responsibility as a fucking head coach is to protect your players.
And by the way, that's how you permanently damage your quarterback psyche. When you put him out 100%. There,
we see it constantly with young quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's how you get. That's what you impact their pocket awareness when they're constantly taking hits. I mean, injuries are part of it. But when
Sam Darnold was seeing ghosts for a reason. Yeah,
that's how you do it. I mean, Nate Solder shouldn't even be on an NFL roster. We don't know what Matt Pert is. The one thing we do know is that he should not be on the field. You know, who's there? Who's he throwing to? Colin Johnson? Who's Colin Johnson?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know who the other receiver was. Dante Pettis? I thought he would cut him. I didn't know he was still on the team until I saw him playing yesterday. I swear, I was like, I'm going to cut this guy.
Yep. Oh, man. All right. Anything else on Judge?
No. I think he's on the hot seat, and I think it's only – as the losses continue to pile up, it's going to get worse. I mean, this is
– I don't disagree. Let's talk about the GM and the owner in conjunction with one another.
Can we talk about the quarterback real quick? Because I want to say something about the quarterback. I think Daniel Jones has played – I think you'll agree with me. I think he's played particularly well this season outside of, you know, a couple of plays here and there in Denver. He didn't play well yesterday, and that's okay to say.
No, he didn't.
Like, was he dealing with just terrible – was he in a terrible situation yesterday? Yes, of course. But, you know, he threw three interceptions, and one of them, Sterling Shepard, fell down. It's hard to put the blame on Daniel Jones. But the other two were just.
Which does MetLife have the worst turf in the entire fucking NFL?
It's a terrible stadium. I mean, it's just.
Of course, it's a terrible stadium. Because by design, it looks like a prison toilet. I mean, it's horrible. If you go beyond that, I legitimately think that they have the worst turf in the NFL. Like, John Mara can't run a football team, and he can't even build the football stadium right.
No. But he spends money on it.
It's asshole.
And the other two interceptions were. On him. He got baited. It was a bad play.
Yes, absolutely.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the situation is. It was a bad throw and it got picked.
He had a bad game.
He had a bad game.
He was shit.
So let's not try to sugarcoat it or ignore it. He didn't play well. Right? Was the circumstances great? No. But two things can be true. He was in a completely terrible situation and he did not play well.
Yep.
And when we talk about that question of, you know, do we have our guy? You can't just ignore it, nor can you sugarcoat it, because that's how you fuck yourself up for the long term.
True.
So let's talk about your two favorite people now.
All right. So I want to know if you agree with this or not, because I tweeted it yesterday, or maybe it was this morning. I don't know. The timelines just all blur together. So there's a lot of debate. And let me just say this. I'm very proud of the Giants fan base for the way that they've sort of unified and everyone just finally understands what we've been saying since the moment they hired Dave Gettleman and that this guy is an idiot and he needs to go. So kudos to pretty much everyone with the exception of a few of you. You're idiots. I don't think you'll ever figure it out. But when it comes to the firing of Dave Gettleman, okay, the two biggest reasons people like to give And I'm sure that I've given these as reasons in the past. I'm almost positive I have. But like the more you think about these things and the more they marinate and the crazier you get watching this football team, like at least in my eyes, like I feel like I've gained more clarity into the situation. Mm-hmm. It really is just so simple, right? So the two reasons that people like to give for firing Dave or for firing Dave Gettleman now is one, you get a head start on your search.
Not just on your search. There's another ad.
On your organizational evaluation, yes. Call it. Because for some organizations, it would be just simply a search. Right. For the Giants, there are obviously deeper-rooted issues, right. Which we will discuss. Right. You don't need to fire Dave Gettleman in order to accomplish that. You can bring in a consulting group. You can bring in outside people. Like, seriously, because even if you do fire him in order to bring him in, like, that uncomfortable feeling, like, that still radiates. Like, Kevin Abrams is still there. Like, Chris Mara is still there. Chris Pettit is still there. Like, these people are all still in the building to be made uncomfortable by you bringing in an outside group or person to do this evaluation from top to bottom. Okay? So, pardon me, but I don't give a fuck about Dave Gettleman's feelings. You don't need to fire him in order to get that process started. Okay, that's number one. Number two is the second reason is you don't want this guy buying or doing something irresponsible at the trade deadline. Think about it. Do you really honestly think at this point that Dave Gettleman has the power to go rogue and start dealing draft picks for players on poor contracts? One, their cap situation is so bad that he probably couldn't even do that if he tried. And two, really, do you think he has that power? You think he has that power to go rogue and do some dumb shit at the deadline? Because if they do, you bet your ass that that decision was checked by John Mara, Chris Mara, and everyone and Kevin Abrams and everyone in between. All right? No one person is going rogue and making an irresponsible decision at the deadline. If that decision is made, that decision is made as a collective. So keeping Gettleman's there, Gettleman's not there, it doesn't matter. Because I think at this point we all agree that he is a lame duck GM and he's gone at the end of the season regardless. Okay? So those are the two main reasons that people use as that's why you got to fire Gettleman. I disagree, and I just gave the reasons for why I disagree. You need to fire Dave Gettleman because he is bad at his job. And he has been bad at his job for the last, since the day that he was hired, since the day he used number two on a running back, since the day he openly admitted he traded a draft pick for a player on an expiring contract to back himself into a corner to then give that player an abomination of a contract. He has been, since they didn't have a pass rusher, I'm going to fix the offensive line. Yeah, the list goes on. The last 4 years of podcasts we've done has just been one giant textbook on why Dave Gettleman is not a good general manager. Even the moves of his that we've praised have almost entirely turned out to be the wrong move. All right?
Yeah, that's true.
You need to fire him to show accountability, that to show the fan base that you don't need to be apathetic like Ethan and Weiss on their weekly podcast. That to show people that you fucking care. Okay? When you don't do a fucking press conference at all during the season, when you run from the media, when you kick trash cans, when you refuse to comment when you're at the Tom Coughlin J Fund, whatever the charity is. Okay? All of that indicates to us that you're a fucking bozo, you're an idiot, and that you don't care. And that you're a coward. Yes. And that you're a huge coward. You need to fire this guy to show the fans and to show the players that there is actual accountability within this organization. And that if you fuck up, it doesn't matter if you're my brother. It doesn't matter if you've been with the organization for 25 years. It doesn't matter if Ernie Accorsi kissed you on the mouth and said, Dave, you're the guy. It doesn't matter. If you fuck up and you suck at your job, that there is some accountability, and that is why the Giants need to fire Dave Gettleman yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, you have to show sort of... I think the big thing with John Mara...
Show me you care. Show me you care with the same passion that I just showed you that I care.
Yeah, I don't think John Mara really knows or understands football. I've been thinking about this a lot. I think he's in over his head to a certain extent, because if you look at the Giants' history, right? Wellington Mara, great person. When he needed to...
Idiot.
He meant a lot to
great
me.
Great guy. Just like John Mara. I'm sure John Mara is like is a lovely person. He's a fucking idiot.
Yeah. I think when Wellington Mara needed to... was in a very dark time with his organization, the team or the league sort of... they didn't really step in, but they sort of gave him a suggestion on who to hire. They were sort of that committee that fans want now. To come in and sort of help the Giants finding a new team president. I think George Young was that. I think in this sense, the only thing John Mara knows is George Young. Because that's essentially the Giants' history. It's George Young. Because Ernie Accorsi came from George Young. Jerry Reese came from Ernie Accorsi, who came from George Young. Dave Gettleman came from Ernie Accorsi, who, oh, by the way, came from George Young. So that's the only thing he knows. So when we talk about like this guy wants to be comfortable, that I don't think it's a comfort thing. I think it's more so that's what he knows. He doesn't know how to go out and find a consultant firm or a group of people that know football to come in and tell him, hey, to evaluate his organization and tell him how it's done, because the only thing he really knows is George Young. I need to go and hire somebody that was hired or worked for once upon a time George Young. And I think that it's been evident of that, because every decision he's made, there has been some sort of tie to the New York Football Giants, especially in the front office, where you've brought guys in that either are related to you or either worked for George Young. That's what this has all been about. And I don't think that he's capable of saying, okay, I need to go outside and find me the next George Young. I think what he's looking for is he's trying to rekindle that George Young by hiring people that either worked for the Giants or once upon a time worked for George Young. And I think that that's the problem in itself, because I think that philosophy is gone. The league is different now. It's just, it's evident. I mean, you look like the Giants are a laughingstock organization, man. I get it. They won two Super Bowls since you know in the last 20, 25 years, but where they are now, they are a joke. And there isn't some like you don't get to say, well, we won two Super Bowls. You don't get to hold ceremonies for, you know, a Super Bowl team or a player, and that's automatically going to make people forget about the now. The now is you are a joke. And until this owner realizes that he has to not be a part of the football operations, I mean, it's really just a changing decks on the Titanic, really, because this is a sinking ship. And look, you can go ahead and fire Dave Gettleman, and we'll be happy about that. But to me, John Mara has to really step aside, just be an owner, just go write checks, sit in your suite and enjoy the game. Like, be an owner. You don't need to be a part of the football operation as much as he is. And ever since he really put his imprints on this organization from a football operations perspective, shit has been going down. And it's pretty evident of that, as you can see the last decade, where they are... It is... You really can't put it into perspective how bad this organization is and the terrible spot they're in right now. And until this owner wakes up and realizes that, I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I really don't.
Yeah, me neither.
I really
me neither. Don't. Especially when you have Dave Gettleman and John Mara mouthpiece Ralph Vacchiano writing blogs about how John Mara really, really, really doesn't want to go outside the organization. Now, again, not so sure how much I buy into that.
Yeah.
But history tells us
that
is what he will do.
The best indication of the future is history. So,
couldn't have said it better myself. And I had a lot of people. I think our good friend Monty tweeted out the Ralph snippet in the article that I retweeted or that I quote tweeted, because I'm blocked by Ralph, so I didn't even see that
you are. Posted. I'm not. Oh, yeah. And I've actually gone back and forth more than you have, I think.
You have, yeah, because there was a point last season where he was like, oh, yeah, I'll come on your podcast, and then he never came on the podcast. I'm blocked by Ralph, Patty Traina,
yeah, I think Paul Dottino. I don't know why she blocked me. I've never really...
The two jackasses, Giant Insider. I don't even know their names.
They're not even worth mentioning to me. I don't know much about them.
Yeah, I don't. I'm trying to think who else and a few others, but whatever. So yeah, the snippet that he tweeted out today, there were a lot of fans, like a lot, who replied and basically said, "Listen, I've dealt with a lot of bullshit the last few years. If the Giants fire Gettleman only to promote from within, I really think I'm just done."
He can't do that. You know why? Because John Mara, I think at this point, he needs to have a reset with this fan base. And part of that's like trust.
But do you think he realizes that?
Truthfully.
Because this goes back to the Eli ceremony,
I think think that was a wake up call to him. Getting booed.
No. We spoke about this. We spoke about this. His comments after the game indicate that he didn't fully understand why he was getting booed.
Yeah, I think
his comments after the game were basically like, "Oh, I'd boo too if we were 0-2 and down."
I know that.
No, bro, we're booing you because you've been awful for 4 years.
No, I think he knows why. I think he knows why people are booing him. It's been the course that. See, you know why he knows that is because he mandated that this team start winning and be competitive, and he didn't just do that because, you know, he just woke up one day and said, "I want to start cutting checks and I want to win games." No. I think he did that because he knew that losing season after losing season after losing season, shit starts to pile up. And you have to sort of, like I said, get that reset with your fan base. And that's why he said, we got to start winning.
But he doesn't know how to do that.
That's the problem.
Okay. All right, fine.
I think he realizes that he has lost his fan base. I don't even think it's about losing anymore. He has lost his fan base.
I think we're saying very similar things. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like he's lost his fan base. He knows why he's lost his fan base. Not because they're losing just this year. It's been a culmination of things. The problem is now is, does he know how to fix it? He knows what's wrong. He knows he has the wrong people in charge and people that have been with the organization for so long. Not only the fact that they've been with the organization for so long without being held accountable for the dreadful losing, it's because, like, you have to ask yourself, I'm looking around the league and I see guys getting jobs from within the organization, you know, assistant GMs, directors of player personnel, scouts getting, you know, promotions to other teams. How come that's not happening here? How come nobody's knocking on my door wanting to interview Chris Pettit or Kevin Abrams? How come that's not happening here? How come none of my scouts are not getting promotions with other teams? So once you start asking those questions, you're like, okay, I think I know what the problem is. Now it's about fixing it. And that's where the doubt is. Does this guy know how to fix it?
I don't think they're hiring.
I think you're
I think you're even giving him too much credit. Like, go back a step to what you just said about why aren't my guys getting interviews. I don't even think he thinks of that. I really don't. I think he probably just thinks that I just do a very good job of retaining my guys, that they love it here so much that even if they were to get an interview, they would say no thank you. I mean, like, that's how stupid this guy is.
You know what's funny? The last time, you know who interviewed Kevin Abrams for the GM job? Guess which owner? Guess.
Is it like an obvious one?
We've talked about.
How long ago was this?
This was about. Let me look. Bear with me for a second. It was recent. It was in like the last, I want to say like 5 years. Let me just look at this guy's. I want to look at how long their current GM has been there. So
we'll do a little live radio. So, is it a team with a GM that should definitely be fired, like, already?
I'm sorry. It's a team that you're like, this makes total fucking sense that they would interview Kevin Abrams.
I mean, the Bears?
There you go. There you go. The Chicago Bears interviewed Kevin Abrams.
Chicago Bears.
Yeah, it was Kevin Abrams interview.
Well, that goes back to the last episode that I did with you where I brought up that article that someone then found afterwards about how the Bears and the Giants talk and work very closely to one another.
Yeah. I think
like the ownership.
I'm sorry. It wasn't Kevin Abrams. It was actually Mark Ross who interviewed.
Okay, Kevin whatever.
Abrams. So sorry about that.
Okay.
But she get That's you, why okay. You get my you get where I'm going.
Yes, it makes a lot of sense.
Yes. So you have to I don't see Kevin Abrams or Chris Pettit getting the job. I don't. I really don't. Because John Mara, I think, really wants to – he really wants sort of
– Who was the guy that they brought over from the Lions? O'Brien?
Kyle O'Brien. That's one guy I wouldn't
Kyle
mind.
Kyle O'Brien. No, I would absolutely mind it because that means that Joe Judge is
Let me finish my thought. I wouldn't mind it if it is separate from Joe Judge
entirely. Nope. That's a package deal.
Like if they fire Joe Judge midseason, then it's like okay,
they're not going to do.
They're not going to do. But let's say they fire him while they're interviewing general managers, then you're like okay, I'm cool with Kyle O'Brien being a candidate. But that's the only one, and that's not even my choice.
Never.
I just think that if there is one guy gun to my head, I don't mind him. But
no, I would absolutely mind. And by the way, that's another thing that I meant to bring up in my why. People think that you need to fire Dave Gettleman. Who is available now that's worthy of even being interviewed? All these guys have jobs and are not going to take an interview midseason.
Yes.
Like until you get to playoff time, like that just doesn't happen.
More likely than not, the Giants' next general
manager. If you're jobless, it means you're like a talking head. You're like ESPN or NFL.
Yeah.
Like,
I think you could you can certainly. An interview doesn't hurt you, so I think you can talk to people. I just think that with John Mara, he has to sort of – there is a strong revolt from his fan base, and I think he has to do something to sort of not even regain their trust, but just sort of to like, you know, put some sort of – you know, put one of the fires out. And I think that – like, I just imagine what it's going to be like during Michael Strahan's retirement ceremony. I mean, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Like, what
if... he doesn't deserve this.
What is he... Like, do you just... Like, does Bob Papa do the ceremony? Like, I don't understand. Like what happened? Like, how... Are you not going to show your face for that either? You're going to put Michael Strahan, right? Like, this...
David Deal.
The second greatest defensive player in the Giants' history, I think. You know, arguably. I mean,
seriously, why not... David Deal will do it. Sean O'Hara will do it.
Like who's going to come and do it? Are you going to bring Ernie Accorsi to come in? You know, like, I think Giant fans at this point would boo Ernie Accorsi, too, for making the team hire.
Oh, absolutely.
Dave Gettleman. Like, who is going to come in here and do it? Are you going to have Michael Strahan do it himself? I think he can probably handle a ceremony on his own.
He honestly great. Might.
Yeah, I mean, like how – you have to show your face, but –
I think that's the only way that fans don't boo, is if Strahan does it himself.
One of the underlying things in this whole thing as this season continues to spiral is, like we talk about John Mara's tipping point, when is it going to be Steve Tisch's tipping point? Like, at what point does he say, like I want say in football operations? Like, I want to be a part of the decision making. Like, obviously,
Steve
Tisch is not a football guy, but he might say, I want to, you know, bring in a firm, or I want to like
that'll never happen. Never.
You don't think so?
No, the guy does not give a fuck. That's like another thing that I've probably been guilty of in the past. Like, oh please, Steve Tisch does not give a flying fuck. Like
Tisch wanted to fire Dave Gettleman last year.
Yeah, and guess what? It didn't happen.
But I'm saying
it didn't happen. The guy doesn't care enough.
That was the first time.
If he cared enough, he would throw a fucking stink.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily caring. I think it's him. Like they have the ownership has there's a partnership there, but like,
sure,
this is uncharted waters really for this relationship. Like these many losing seasons. Like at what point does he say no? Like I want this is a 50-50 operation. I think it's what is it 50? Like their ownership group is 50-50, right? Like it's.
I don't think it ever happens personally.
I mean, you have to see what would happen. Like, if he comes out and he's like not come out, but when does Steve Tisch say like enough's enough? Like, what if Steve Tisch says, hey, this is Like, we need to talk. Like, this is not working. Like, I need to have a larger say. I genuinely believe that they interviewed Lewis Riddick because that's what Steve Tisch wanted. I have that theory in my mind.
Okay. I mean,
Steve Tisch, TV person, Hollywood. Yeah. You know, Lewis Riddick was on TV. Like, I definitely see Steve Tisch sitting in his home watching ESPN, listening to Lewis Riddick talk, and was like, yeah, I want to interview that guy for my GM job.
I can, all right, you know I can saying? See it.
So,
yeah.
That's where we're at. I mean, really. I mean, that's really, really where we're
with
at.
With the trade deadline approaching.
Nothing is going to happen. Not with Dave in charge.
Nothing. Oh, I'm so glad you agree with me. I mean, listen, there's a lot of things about the Giants to be apathetic about. I am totally apathetic about the trade deadline unless the collective group decides to acquire someone, then I will be absolutely irate. I think you're all fooling yourselves if you think that the Giants are going to be able to move any sort of significant piece, well, and that includes Evan Engram. No, I don't see Evan Engram going anywhere.
I think they can move pieces. There are teams that will call.
No, I'm saying,
like, Evan Engram.
I'm saying they won't.
He clearly has
respect. I'm saying they won't.
I know they won't. They won't, but they do have movable pieces. Like, they will.
Oh, absolutely. But, like, but they're not going to.
No. Part of the reason why, and it's awesome that you brought this up, is because, see, like, when you have, like, when we talk about dysfunction, right? When you have a GM on one timeline, a head coach, like, the three most important elements to a football team, you have the GM, you have the head coach, you have the quarterback. And typically, the good organizations have those three guys on the same timeline. They might not have all came into the organization together, but they're all on the same timeline. The Giants can't get a fair evaluation of Daniel Jones because it's some of it's bad luck because the injuries, some of it's because how horrible this roster constructed with the fact that when Andrew Thomas goes down, the offensive line just completely falls apart. And you're not able to get, and unfortunately he's dealing with injuries. And I've seen
which I'm just going to interject real quick. It is so fucking frustrating when people are like, oh, like, the offense sucks because of injuries. The sign of a good GM and a good head coach is being able to draft depth and coach them up well enough so that they aren't total dog shit, so that they can be below average or bad but still serviceable. And the exactly. Giants don't have that.
No.
Carry on.
And the thing is, with Andrew Thomas, is I've seen this movie 100 times with linemen. I totally see this ending with Andrew Thomas having season-ending foot surgery.
100%.
Like, that's how this is going to end. He might play through it, but there will be a setback, and then you'll get the headline that Andrew Thomas is deciding, you know, the Giants are shutting down, Andrew Thomas is going to have foot surgery. Like, that's where this thing is headed. But I think because they've just put themselves in such a shit position with the way they've built this roster, it's tough for them to get an evaluation on their quarterback, who, oh, by the way, is on year three of his rookie contract. And if you guys are saying, well, I'm sold on Daniel Jones, well, are you ready to pay? Like, Daniel Jones has one more year of a rookie scale pay. The fifth year option is going to be making more than $20 million. And then he's a free agent. Like, are you willing to sit here and say that I feel comfortable making Daniel Jones a $25 to $30 to $35 million a year quarterback? Because I'm not. And I like Daniel Jones. So you're not getting a fair evaluation. This is an important year. You can't get the evaluation on him fairly, right? You got the head coach who's trying to avoid being on the hot seat, who's trying to win games to avoid the hot seat. And then you got a GM who's, I mean, earlier you called him a lame duck GM, who's just trying to make a case to keep his job. They're not thinking about the long term of the Giants. They're not thinking about what can we do to help this team in 2022. They're thinking, how can I keep my job now? So they're not going to trade Evan Engram. They're not going to listen to offers on James Bradbury or even Logan Ryan. I think Logan Ryan for Tampa Bay would be perfect. I don't know what they're south.
The only person on this team that could get traded is Jabril Peppers, and that's if he demands a trade.
I think Evan Engram, because he has some people around the league, he's so revered. I mean, the guy was a Pro Bowler last year. I think he can. He does have some sort of value. I'm not saying the Giants can get like a third or fourth round pick. I think it'll be a late round pick, but nonetheless, that's what I'm talking about. Like, Evan Engram's tenure with the Giants is going to end at the end of the year. I don't see a way of him coming back. Although I've seen crazier things, but Jabril Peppers, I don't know what his value is. I mean, there has to be a perfect spot for him, and I don't think that exists. I mean, where could you see Jabril Peppers going? I mean, Tampa's a big one because their secondary is beat up by the.
I mean, listen, it's one of those. Yeah, I'm just saying, like, he's a guy who has no future here. He's on a dog shit team. If he's like, Dave, fucking trade me. Like, they'll trade him for a seventh.
I think Darius Slayton has some sort of trade value. He's still a young, cheap player.
I disagree.
I think, but these are guys that'll get you at best a sixth, you know, possibly seventh round pick.
That's generous.
You're not getting anything for them. My point is that nobody's in this organization right now is thinking about 2022 because nobody knows if they're going to be here in 2022. So that's correct. Where the dysfunction comes in, and that's why the Giants are sort of fucked themselves when they put, you know, they didn't fire Dave Gettleman after 2019 and didn't just start over with a new GM and a new head coach. So that's where things are. I don't think anything's going to happen. I don't think they're going to go. There's not going to be like a Leonard Williams type trade. I just think it's going to be a quiet deadline. They're going to emphasize, you know, we like the 53 that we have, and they're going to go from there because nobody's thinking about the future.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I don't think they're going to trade future assets for guys to help them win this year because that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
At least it shouldn't happen.
I want to talk about Saquon.
Yeah.
So just a quick, I don't know, I'll call it like an analogy. So, big Islanders fan, my Islanders fans who are listening, I'm sure there's very few of you, will understand this analogy, but I'll do some educating right now. So the Islanders used to be owned by a man named Charles Wong. Charles Wong admittedly bought the Islanders as a real estate play. He wanted to buy the team, establish himself in the area, and then he wanted to build what he had called the Lighthouse Project. It was this giant complex. It had a hockey rink. It could also be a concert venue. I think it had a minor league baseball stadium, huge apartment complexes, malls, businesses, like affordable housing. It was supposed to be like this monstrosity. It never happened for various political reasons that I won't get into. The project never happened. When Charles Wong owned the team, he operated the organization as what my father fondly refers to as a country club, where if you were buddies with Charles, you were rewarded and rewarded handsomely. And there were no two bigger beneficiaries of this buddy-buddy relationship than Rick DiPietro, first-round goalie who received a monster contract only to go on to have a mediocre, injury-riddled career, and another goalie, the backup goalie, Garth Snow, who Weiss, you might remember from my days ranting about him a few years ago, whose reward for being buddy-buddy with the owner was to go from backup goalie to general manager of the franchise, okay? On top of just becoming general manager, it is like confirmed and reported that on Charles's way out, when he sold the rest of his stake of the team, he gave Garth a midnight like contract extension, like a final fuck you to the new ownership. Ah, here you go. I'm going to pay, you know, Garth Snow. So like, even if you fire Garth, he's still going to get paid, right? Like that type of relationship. Okay. I truly believe that Saquon Barkley and John Mara have not to that extent, that type of relationship. But I think that Saquon is the type of guy who always says the right things, always plays out that like fake motivational, like never give up attitude, wears the C on his chest, second overall pick, sells jerseys. Fans who are less educated than others love the guy for some reason. I really think that John Mara has
That still call him a generational back.
Exactly. I truly think that they're like John Mara has that type of affinity for Saquon where it doesn't matter who gets brought in here. Saquon is not getting traded anytime soon. Healthy, injured, holdout, contract extension, whatever it is. I really think that, like, he gives John Mara that oddly warm sense of stability. And because the Giants rely on him so heavily for, like, that marketing angle, I really just don't see him leaving anytime soon. And I think, especially given the fact that he's already injured his ankle this year, any fan that is thinking or hoping that he gets moved at this deadline is just fooling themselves. I think even if he goes on to tear it up this year and a new GM comes in here, it's going to be one of those contingent on, well, what would you do with Saquon? And if the GM is like, oh, I would fucking trade him because he's a running back, what do you think I would do? I really think that that would hurt the GM's chances. And have no evidence to back this up. This is all gut feeling and just based on what we've seen from the outside. Like, I really do think that John Mara has this weird fetish for Saquon, and like, we are just going to have to live with that for the immediate future.
I'm going to say the exact opposite. I think his time with the Giants is tied to who the next GM is. If it's not anyone with ties to the organization, Saquon's time with the Giants, his days are numbered. That doesn't mean that I think that he won't play next year for the Giants. I think there's a good chance he will. I don't see a future here. I mean, the injuries are starting to pile up. Any new GM that comes in, when we talk about early impressions and does this guy understand football from a modern-day perspective, will understand that you do not give running backs a second contract like that, and especially one that hasn't played a full season since his rookie year. And given where we think the state of the roster is right now.
But again, this is all based on us assuming that John Mara is going to do the right thing, which he has proven over and over that he does not know how to do.
I 100% agree with you, but I don't...
Like, I agree. Like, I shouldn't need to clarify this. I 100% agree that he should be traded. Like, without a doubt. I just think that he gives John Mara this weird sense of security that, like, John doesn't want to move him.
I'm not trading him unless I get more than what he's worth back. Instead, I just play him out.
It's just not going to happen.
I just play him out his rookie contract. Because, again, I used the number 2 pick on him, and I he's still a great back. My whole goal would be, how can I, you know, building the offensive line is important for many reasons. Saquon's about like maybe 4th or 5th on that thing, but you obviously want to have a strong offensive line. And if the new GM, whoever that may be, comes in and he builds the offensive line, I think you could get some sort of something out of Saquon Barkley more than the value of you trading him for. I don't know what his value would be today. I think his stock is probably extremely low right now. But nonetheless, this is all, you know, prudent on whether or not this owner does the right thing. And as I sit here today, I have a tough, like, let me tell you how I think this whole thing plays out. I'm just being honest with you. And I'm not reporting this. This is not something that someone told me. This is just me as a fan watching this organization, as a fan, you know, knowing everything I know about this owner and this organization. The way I see this playing out today, and this could change, is Dave Gettleman fired and the Giants bring in a GM to work with Joe Judge. And we've heard some names, people that work with the Patriots. That's how I see this thing playing out. I don't think that as we sit here today, the owner is going to move on from Joe Judge. Now, if this team continues to be an embarrassment on the field and they're not competing and games aren't close, that changes things. But right now, I think Dave Gettleman is going to be gone, but I think that it's going to be Joe Judge and then somebody that's worked with Joe Judge in the past. And I think that's a mistake. Because
I'll be dead inside.
Yeah, I think that is a mistake because I don't think
that's when I turn into the Joker.
Yeah, well, here's why I think it's a mistake, because Joe Judge hasn't done anything to give you that assurance. Like, all you need to do is get him somebody that he's worked with in the past. We know what this organization needs to do. A full teardown is what needs to happen. Unfortunately, given what I know about this owner, he'll go outside the organization, but he's going to hire somebody that is tied to the head coach, and that's where it's going to be. And unfortunately for him, and unfortunately for the GM that's coming in, and I don't think that it's going to sit well with the fan base. I don't think they're going to, John Mayer's going to get that reset where they're going to let him actually do a full rebuild. And it's just going to be a continuation of the years past where it might not be the GM's fault, but he's going to be lumped together with Dave Gettleman with the Giant way, per se.
Yep. All right, we've been going a while. Should we do some questions?
Yeah, let's do some questions.
You want to do it this time?
Yeah, I'll pull it up.
There are so many notifications today.
There are. I got a lot of people sending me stuff. Let me pull up the questions for you. One of the things I actually got criticized for last week was somebody said, you need to have your questions ready before you actually get to the question segment of your show. They're right.
No. No, I don't care.
So, all right. Mike NYY is blaming injuries.
Mike,
yes, good friend of mine too. Is blaming injuries for all of this a cop out for Dave Gettleman's bad drafting or a lack of depth in the roster, or is it a good excuse for why this team sucks? The Giants are both a bad football team and an unlucky football team this year. In the last 2 years, they've been just a bad football team. This year, they've got some unluckiness with them. The defense only lost one guy. They're perfectly fine on the defensive line, but they can't rush the passer. That's an important element to why this team sucks. Their secondary is perfectly fine, but they still can't cover. Offensively, they were, you know, Kadarius Toney was there week one. He was there week two. Yes, he was still recovering from COVID, but he wasn't even a part of the offense until the New Orleans game. So all this is on coaching, and this roster is not as good as I thought it was. It's very flawed, and I don't think you can just blame the injuries. I don't think that's going to be a cop out for Dave Gettleman, because defensively they haven't lost a lot of people.
Yeah, I think. Agreed. If anything, it's more of an indictment on him. I think if anything, the injuries are more of an indictment on him, because we've said it a million times. Like we said it with Jerry Reese, we're saying it with Dave Gettleman. Sign of a good GM is being able to find depth in a draft. And depth that is, it doesn't have to be like replacement level depth, right? Like that's when you're really good and you get really lucky. But like, don't be bottom of the barrel. And we haven't been able to get even that with the depth that he's drafted. So people are using it as an excuse. You see it all over social media, but it shouldn't be an excuse.
It's very simple. On the offensive line, you lose Andrew Thomas. There's no reason why you go from competent to just an abomination with your left tackle going down. Many teams have their left tackle or key offensive lineman go down. They do not become what the Giants offensive line becomes when Andrew Thomas goes down. That's a good one. Might be too late for this pod. It's not. But is this organization attractive for GMs? Do the team's current talent or draft capital make it an attractive job? This is from Giants fan in D.C., Joe Smith. That's not my burner account, by the way.
I mean, it should be.
Yeah. Two first-round picks could be in the top.
But again, it all depends on that person's limitations.
Yeah.
Can they come in here and do what they fucking want?
Right.
Or are they going to have to check everything with John and Chris and the other Chris and Kyle and
every fucking era that exists?
Tim McDonald. Yeah. Like, are they going to be able to come in here and say, fuck you, get out of that chair, you don't know what you're doing? Right. Are they going to be able to say, hey, scouting department, get lost, I'm bringing my own guys in? Are they going to be able to say, okay, Dan Jones, you're serviceable, but to be honest, you're not what I'm looking for. I'm going to trade you and see what happens. Like, come on.
Yeah. And is he going to be able to run his football operations?
It should be.
If the answer is yes, and it should be, then yeah, I mean, they have draft assets. I mean, they have two first round picks, two third round picks. I mean, it's definitely. I mean, the salary cap situation is not good, but I think they can fix that. It might take a while, but it can be done. A lot of this stuff are people just wondering how they can get out of this. It's a good one. and I typically didn't want to answer this now, but let's do this. What are some characteristics you want in a new GM? Also, throw out three guys you want to interview for the position, but you can throw out just one. I'll leave this for you.
Me?
Yeah.
What? I mean, it's Mike Borgonzi.
He's director of player personnel for the Chiefs, right?
I think he's now VP of something. Yeah, I think he got a promotion this past offseason. But yeah, he's been with the Chiefs forever. He's got connections to the Seahawks Super Bowl team, if I'm not mistaken. I think he worked with Chris Ballard. Wasn't Chris Ballard part of that like personnel group in Seattle? I don't know. He's got connections to Indy, to Seattle. He's been with the Chiefs for like 10 years now. He's my guy. I've made it known he's my guy. Huge fan. What was the other part of the question?
What are the characteristics you want in a new GM?
Forward thinking. Like, it really is that simple. It is that simple, yeah. Nothing about the Giants on offense or defense is forward thinking,
nope.
Is modern.
Nope.
And like you've said, they don't have an identity. Nope. Like, all these good teams have an identity. Like, the Chiefs will just pedal to the floor and just fucking skull fuck you on offense. There are teams like, I mean, the Steelers are taking a step back because Big Ben is old and washed, but like, still, that defense is the identity of that team. Like, their goal is to make you pay, rush the passer.
Yeah.
Patriots on offense, like, well-balanced offense with a defense that you absolutely cannot run on. Like, these are identities. Like, the Giants don't have any of these identities. Like, pick something and be really, really, really good at it, preferably on offense.
They are a terribly structured roster. It's a terribly structured roster. This was a good question from Nick Varney. Are we in a worse situation now than we cleaned house in 2017?
Yes.
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Only glimmer of hope.
If you didn't think it was possible, it is.
Which is true. That's the only glimmer of hope. I think in 2017, the glimmer of hope that we had was that we were going to get a number two pick in the draft. And at that time, it was something that we we didn't know what it felt like to have a top five, top three pick. Now we're sort of accustomed to it, picking in the top five. But yeah, I think we are in a worse situation. I think it's eerily similar to 2017. I mean, high price free agents on defense, the terrible offensive line, uncertainty at the quarterback position. A really good skill position players that are banged up. I mean, it's a coach that seems to be, showing week to week, showing every week that he's not fit to be a head coach. I mean, these are all obvious signs. And it's crazy because Ben McAdoo won 11 games in his first year. This dude is 7-15 as a head coach.
It's amazing, really.
And we're sitting here talking about him keeping his job and the Giants bringing in a GM that can work with him.
Sad state of affairs.
I'm just saying. 7-15. Okay, we'll do this. Actually, I'm going to save this. I haven't asked you this in a while. Where are you on the danometer?
The denometer. By the way, Will texted me. He wants me to tell everyone. Oh, where's the text?
I think he sent that to me too.
It was in our group. Yes, he says, I really regret saying 9.5 on my denometer. Yeah. When you do it tonight, please amend mine to an 8.1. So Will is on the record. His denometer is 8.1. Could have sworn we were doing it out of like a 100. So let's for my sake, we'll do. All right, so Will is an 81.
Yes.
What are you at?
I feel really bad for Daniel Jones because I think there's so much there to like about him. But my confidence, and it's not all his fault, my confidence is about, to be honest, I'm like 50-50 right now.
I was going to say something similar. I'll go 40.
Like, I'm 50-50 because I really do believe that there is there is something there. I think he can do things that probably we didn't think he could do. The problem is that he's just so fucked because this offensive line just seems to, like, it's so bad. I mean, he's pressured literally every time he drops back to pass. And I'm a huge proponent of, like, I want my quarterback to make people around him better. But it's really tough to turn Nate Solder into a competent offensive lineman. Which, by the way, I don't know why Nate Solder's out there. I mean, they have tackles on the practice squad. I mean, at this point, why not just try one of them? What are we doing with Nate Solder? I mean, yeah. Come on.
I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, whatever. Like, people are going to disagree. I will say, like, I was definitely – I really liked Malik Willis and Matt Corral early in the season. Like, enough to at least say, like, okay, if the Giants were a GM who wanted to bring in his own quarterback, like, I could live with one of those two choices as the replacement. At this point, like, I really just think I'm down to, like – you could sell me on Malik Willis.
That's a, like, you could. The Liberty quarterback.
The those, Liberty quarterback?
Those, like, I don't know.
Yeah. Like, you could sell me on him.
Yeah.
But, like, I can't say I'm like, over the moon about any of these prospects. No. Like, at this point, like, my first choice would be if the new GM were to come in and say he doesn't want Dan Jones, would be to go out there and see which veteran is disgruntled or wants a change in scenery.
Obviously.
And even then, it's probably not possible because the cap situation is so fucked. So it's probably a moot point. And I'm just going to have to live with Daniel Jones for again next year.
Yeah, they sort of need those assets. I think the time to draft a quarterback was the last 2 years. But now it's – to me, I'm with you, man. None of these guys really move the needle for me. And I think with Daniel, I think you just have to – I want to see if a new GM and a new head coach can come in here. Can they – like, let's say – since I'm watching them right now, hypothetically speaking, let's say they hire your guy Borgonzi, right, and then they hire Brian Daboll from Buffalo, who I really really like.
Why do people think he's going to come here?
I don't know. I'm just hypothetically speaking. Like, I really like Brian Daboll. I think a head coach would come here if there is a sort of a new structure put in place. I think they would. But let's say they bring in a Brian Daboll. I'm interested to see what Brian Daboll can do with Daniel Jones' development. Can he continue to make him into a better passer? Can he improve on his weaknesses? Can he make what can he make out of Daniel Jones? That's what I'll be interested in that. You could sign me up for that. What I won't sign up for is Joe Judge is here, Jason Garrett is here, and here is some New England Patriot director of scouting,
right. And this
is what we're gonna do. Like, to me, that's not gonna work. I can get behind a reset in the coaching staff, a reset in the front office, and new people coming in and saying, "Hey, look, we got Daniel Jones under contract. We like some of the things he's done. We're gonna see what we can do with him." And at the same time, we're gonna bring in real competition and make him not earn the job, but make him work hard for it. I could be behind that.
All right, let's do one more since we're going on like an hour 20.
Sure. We'll end it on this. And it's a sort of a culmination question of between GM and coaching staff. Do you think the players the Giants drafted and signed would also be bad on other teams, or are they bad because of the Giants coaching staff?
Good question. I mean, it's a very broad. The answer is both.
Yes.
But it's a broad question. Like, you got to give me specific players to
the pass rush.
Really lacks, give an answer.
The pass rush lacks talent.
Exactly.
Right. The secondary, I think, is overrated, but because the pass rush is so bad, the ask of them is just unrealistic. But they are playing bad.
Offensive line would be bad everywhere.
Yes. By the way,
with the exception of a healthy Andrew Thomas. Yeah,
by the way, their offensive line coach, I really like him.
Rob Sale's good.
I do like him. Tight ends, this is an interesting one. I think this is a little bit on the coaching staff because I think Have you yet to have you seen Evan Engram run a seam route up the middle of the field and Daniel Jones throw him the ball?
I don't know.
I haven't. Like I thought I was going to see a little bit of that with the injuries, but I didn't. So I think it's a little bit of both. Receivers. If Kadarius Toney was still dealing with COVID during the season, I don't know why he wasn't placed on short-term IR. He was active.
No, the receivers would be better elsewhere.
Yes, he would have looked a lot better elsewhere. And Kenny Golladay, when healthy, I think would have looked a lot better elsewhere as well. And Daniel Jones, in the right system, would have looked better. So it's a little bit of both.
Agreed.
Carolina right. On Sunday. It's sort of a revenge game for Matt Rhule because John Mara declined him to come to New York and interview for the job.
I'll say this just to end this.
Yeah.
Because I've fought with like a number of Giants fans for like hours a few weeks ago when I was fawning over Matt Rhule.
Uh-huh.
This is not hard to understand. If the Giants wanted to interview Matt Rhule, the Giants could have interviewed Matt Rhule.
Yes.
Okay? David Tepper was more aggressive, more forward-thinking, more willing to open up his pocketbook, not just for Matt Rhule's salary, but for things that Matt Rhule wanted to really turn the Panthers into a forward-thinking and advanced organization. And even though David Tepper did all that and rolled out the red carpet, Matt Rhule still had his agent call John Mara and say, listen, this is what they're offering me. If you could match this,
I want to come.
I would come up and interview. It was not match this right now, like pay me this right now without interviewing me. It was if you would be willing to give me this type of contract,
yes,
I would come up and interview. And if that doesn't tell you that they had a real chance to steal Matt Rhule from the Carolina Panthers, you're a dumbass.
Yes.
So
Matt Rhule wanted to come to the Giants. I firmly believe that.
Me too.
And
the Giants were like, oh, you know what? Joe Judge wears a really mean NYPD cap. We're going to roll with him instead.
And
fucking idiot.
And says some really cliche stuff.
Anyway, I think the Panthers win.
Yes.
I think that defense.
Is this a revenge game for Sam Darnold?
it's a homecoming of sorts. I mean, yes. Listen, he's going to hear a lot of boos in MetLife Stadium, so he's going to feel right at home.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, I think Carolina wins. I think it won't be a blowout, but I think...
No, and the spread's only 2.5. That defense, I mean, they have a pretty good pass rush.
Yeah.
I think that if Andrew Thomas is not healthy, it's going to be a nightmare day for
Daniel. I have my doubts Andrew Thomas is going to play. I don't think Kenny Golladay and Saquon Barkley are coming back. I don't know with Kadarius Toney's ankle injury. And the Carolina Panthers have a really, really good defense. It's going to be low scoring. I'll say something along the lines of, you know, I'm going to say
23-16.
I think it's going to be 23-10. Carolina wins it. The scores, it's going to be close, but it's not going to be close where it's like, oh, man, we lost by one score. No, the Carolina will control this game. Giants will keep it somewhat close, but ultimately, you know, the results will never be in doubt.
Roll of Carolina. Agreed. All right. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me, Ethan GS. Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's good to be back, sort of.
Yes.
All right, let's wrap it up, though.
Sure.
We're hour 25. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me, Ethan GSN, Weiss, NYG Daily, blog, Gotham SN. Subscribe everywhere. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.